Radio Gorgeous, created by women for women.
So I've come out to Vauxhall during the rehearsals of dum-da-dum, the comedy about a bank robbery, the Great Train Robbery, made funny with
Charlie Russell
and
Nancy Wallinger.
So, and you guys are part of Mischief Theater.
Yes.
Yeah.
First, tell me about the play, then we'll talk about Mischief Theater.
Right.
The play. Well, it's quite a traditional farce. It's inspired by a traditional farce in that you have a lot of people pretending to be other people, dressing up as other people, and mistaken identities, people coming in one door whilst someone else hides and sort of swapping places and that kind of thing. And it's about a group of young people who try and rob a bank, and they just rubbish at it. They just keep getting it wrong. So you've got a girl called Caprice, which is the character I play. It's her dad's bank, and her ex-boyfriend's trying to get her to rob it with her, and then, but she's lying to him, and he's lying to her, and she's lying to another guy, and he's lying to her, and they're all lying to one other guy, and it kind of gets quite convoluted and confused and complicated, and hopefully with hilarious consequences.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Fingers
crossed.
That's
the idea. It's called a comedy about bank robbery, so if it wasn't funny, we are in trouble.
Yeah, it's kind of does. Hopefully, it will do what it says on the tin.
Yeah,
it sounds kind of like a Shakespearean panto. You know, with mixed up identity.
We have not explained it well. Then.
Do you know what? No. In a way, that does make sense. In that
the identity thing.
The identity thing, and actually, there are moments where, to an audience, it will be very clear who's who. But they hopefully will enjoy the story enough that they can believe that the people in the story are stupid enough not to have understood. So it doesn't have to be truly realistic and really naturalistic. It's heightened and
it's
fun.
It's slightly heightened. All the costume, all the set, all the acting, everything is kind of a bit bigger than you normally play a straight play.
And whereas, but I wouldn't put panto in because there is no connection to the audience.
Yeah.
We have another show called The Play That Goes Wrong, which is is more like a clown show, and there's a direct communication between the actors on stage and the audience. But this time there is not. There is a fourth wall, if you will.
We've actually had to really, because we've been doing Goes Wrong plays for the last 3 years? Yeah.
Two and a half, 3 years.
And it took a long time in rehearsals, at the beginning of the rehearsals, for us all to like not look out at the audience. And
when there was a joke, and then like, look joke, out and be like, oh no. Like,
just play a goes wrong thing, because it's so ingrained in our body. As soon as we do fast, we like do a goes wrong thing. So actually, that's been one of the things we've been getting our heads around.
Yeah, actually, to quote another member of the company, Dave, he said in another interview, we don't have the goes wrong mask to hide behind this time.
Well, because you have to rely on each other as opposed to the audience.
Right.
Because and the audience does become a member.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
When you do the
and we have
wrong,
to do real acting. Real serious acting.
It takes, interestingly, so much real acting for the play that goes wrong for the audience to accept that you know they're there and that you're still doing all these things. And it does take really good acting.
Yeah.
Yeah, and but actually now what we've got is this, we're pretending you're not there acting, which is really strange because I'm like, acting. I know that there are people there. This is odd. It's really interesting. It's really fun to do. It's what I suppose, to be honest, what we're more used to before we started.
Well, it's just like doing a normal play again.
It's normal play.
And we haven't done a normal play. Well,
yeah, you sort of have to unlearn
what
you've been doing in the Goes Wrong plays.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Radio Gorgeous, the sexist station where you'll only hear the female voice.
And what is it like, because I have to imagine, okay, so it's a normal play, but there's a lot of physicality involved, just like the Goes Wrong plays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
And it has to be, especially as it's not clownish, it's not, you're not colluding with the audience.
Mm-hmm.
That whole spontaneity, repetitive spontaneity each day and each night, is that a different thing? Is that just the sheer physicality? Does that become different for you?
That's definitely a different skill. I think one of the things that's so easy about doing the play that goes wrong over and over and over again is because it is always slightly different depending on the audience that you have. Whereas this will always be slightly different depending on the audience because it's a comedy. The nature of comedy says that you hear the feedback immediately from what you're doing. If you're doing a really straight play, you're not going to hear someone cry. Hopefully, unless they're wailing in the audience.
I was going to say, this is me in the audience.
Unless it's like real serious crying. But that's the thing about comedy is that. But the thing about the play that goes wrong is that you are allowed to change what you're doing because of what they've done. Mm. And at the moment, we've got a really slick, hopefully, set load of pieces that even if the audience do laugh, we still have to carry on and we have to push on with it. And it is going to get much more repetitive than before.
It will.
But I guess I don't actually know what it's like to do something for that long.
That's exactly the same.
I've done it, the longest I've done a normal play, inverted commas, is for a month or 5 weeks.
Yeah.
And not a goes wrong. So that will be fascinating. It requires a lot of discipline. Because I think we all do it. I certainly do it, which is, you know, after a while, you've done the joke a certain way for a long time that works, but you get a bit bored, so you try it differently. But you've got to remember that the person who's come on the 20th night still deserves the same show that the person got on the first night. And if you're just changing it because you're bored, you've got to just get over it, suck it up, do the job. But if you're changing it because you're hopefully making it better, then that's something brilliant, and that's what hopefully will make it possible for you maybe to see the show even more than once.
That's something we do a lot as a company, actually, is change everything all of the time. And it drives our stage management and our producers crazy because we're never happy unless it's actually in our heads right.
Yeah.
Well, perfect, I don't know. Maybe it's never perfect, but yeah, if a moment isn't right, we will try and for literally 9 months to get it right, and we'll try different things all the time, and it's constantly people changing their cues for stage management, like changing the script for the publishers. Like, it really is problematic, but it's something we do a hell of a lot, and we have to kind of explain new people that come in and are employed by us and Kenny Wax or whoever's coming into our process just to be like, look, for the first 6 months, don't assume that it's going to be like this at all, because we will chop it up
because you've got to see how people respond. And actually, if they're not responding the way you hoped they would, get over it. Like, get over your choice that you made that you thought was fantastic. If you're not telling the story properly or getting the joke right, one of these many things you either have to do, either have to be telling the story well, or you need to be being truthful, or you need to be delivering a joke, or a combination of all three. If you're not doing those things, then you need to change it. And so we will. But hopefully what we'll get to is that it's slick and we enjoy doing it because now we trust it and we go, this is great. And you don't mind doing it the same every night because actually the response is good and you like the material. And it helps as well that we're a company of people that really, really get on and we find each other quite funny. So there's a lot of entertainment
and we've got
off
the writers.
And on stage. We've got the writers with us. So it's really fun and everyone's always endeavouring to make it better at every moment, which is amazing. Every single person in our company is constantly working to make it better.
That's a great environment to be in.
It's really great.
It's very intense, though, because if everyone is working to make it better all the time, that means every single moment of every single thing that you do is being challenged all the time. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when you get the final result, that's great and everybody's happy with it, but, like, getting to that point can be really...
And you challenge yourself at every moment. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't give yourself a break. You're doing it and you go... Everyone's saying that's fine, but I think it could be better.
Yeah,
and everyone's going, no, it's fine. And you're like, no, it's fine isn't fine, good enough.
It needs to be amazing.
Yeah. I think I could get this even better. Yeah. I think I just need to half a second of a breath before I do this tiny amount. It gets so detailed. Anyway.
Does that transfer over to your lives?
No. Not at all for me.
I'm quite messy in my life, actually.
I think we all put all of our energy so much into this company that there's no...
I tell you what.
You can't do it with your life as well. You'd be a lunatic.
If I clean my bathroom, I do get a bit like that. When I'm cleaning the bathroom,
good to know.
There's no point in doing it if I'm not doing it properly.
Yeah, but as soon apart as you start cleaning,
you're done. That's it.
You're
doing it all day
until it's done.
Yeah. We're really intense.
Exactly, things you didn't know about each other.
Yeah. We've known each other a long time. Yeah.
Follow us on Twitter, radio_gorgeous. Lots of love, darlings. Mwah.
So how did you both get started with Mischief?
Well... So Mischief Theatre started with a group of people who did the foundation course at Lambda, Boys and Girls, and they decided to do an improv show in Edinburgh that summer at the end of their foundation course, and they had a great time. And then they came back, and some of those people decided to continue with the company and it not just be that one summer. At that time... a few more people joined. So Jonathan Sayer, who's one of the writers, had started Lambda on the 3 year and met Henry Lewis, who is the artistic director and another one of the writers. And I knew Jonathan from previous to that, got invited to come along. And then there was two women at the time, and we really wanted more. And so Nancy, who was also doing the foundation year, but the year after, we got her in because she was so... amazing.
Because I'm so funny.
We had a day and there were so some
funny.
There were brilliant. There were other brilliant people out there.
Amazing.
But Nancy was really.
I split my jeans in my audition, and then I got
a part. We were just like, "That's it. That's the lady we want. Someone have to detrow at any moment."
Yeah, perfect.
Get up.
I did it on purpose. It was actually like the best goes wrong thing that's ever happened.
But we started. So when we started, we were doing improv. Long-form improv show called Lights, Camera, Improvise, which we still do. And there was a group of us that did that just as a small group for such a long time that it became quite a clear group of people. And that includes a lot of the people in the comedy about bank robbery, a lot of people in the original play that goes wrong, who are in it, people who are in it now, people who do Peter Pan goes wrong. So we've sort of spread ourselves out a little, but that's generally how we started. And we've had people join since, obviously, and some people leave, sadly, and all that sort of.
So we've got this like cool group of improv people that sort of mill around all the different plays.
2009 was the year that I joined. That was the January. So 2008 was the year they first went to Edinburgh, that August. And I joined the January 2009 and you were like April of 2009. And we stayed as quite a close-knit group for about 2 or 3 years and then we got some more people in.
And then we expanded.
Which was... another joy, actually, to be fair.
Yeah, now we've got amazing people, because actually all the people that we got in the expansion, we are now in the play that goes wrong, the current cast of the play that goes wrong. So they're just fantastic.
Yeah,
and that's a really short time to then be in the West End.
Yeah, what happened?
It didn't feel like it.
Yeah, what happened with
never judge from the inside, but from the outside, that's a short.
But I mean, I felt like it was a short. I mean, to be in the West End, like, what happened with the play that goes wrong is that we started in a pub in Islington, Old Red Lion Pub.
2012.
In 2012. And we did a run there and we lost money and it didn't go well and we kind of, it was just like...
people liked it, but it just wasn't selling, you know?
We'll all just sort of not do that. And then the Old Red Lion, I think, called us and were like, we have a really spare, eggy slot late night. Can you fill it? And we were like, right, we've already got the play that goes wrong, so we'll do that then. And that... was the time that it transferred to Trafalgar Studios because they had seen something that Henry Lewis had previously done and there was a couple of connections there. So we did a run at the Trafalgar Studios and that extended.
Well, and then that got the second, that happened again with the Traf, was that they went, we've got another eggy period of time. You sold quite well, would you do your show again?
And we ended up doing that second run because it was only an hour long show. We ended up doing 11 show weeks and day jobs. And everybody was nearly dying because it was like, that was just insane.
It was breaking point. We were, I would work during the day and then get to...
What was your day job?
I worked in retail. So I worked in a leather handbags purse shop, which is fantastic, called Aspinall of London, if I'm allowed to say. And they were amazing and very supportive throughout all of it, to be fair. But I would work for them during the day in a shop in Covent Garden, walk to the Trafalgar in 10 minutes to get there for a 7:45 show. We'd do that for an hour. Then there was a 15-minute turnaround to the 9 p.m. show. And then Aspinall were very good. They gave me Saturdays and Thursdays off because we had matinees, so we would have three show days.
Three show days, crazy.
And then I would work on the Sunday because we all need the money. We would all work.
Because for 3 months.
Wow. Well, that wasn't for 3 months in total. That was
7 weeks.
A couple of weeks. Yeah, it depended on who you're talking to about what happened to who. But yeah. It was.
Because you can't count on the money from the shows.
No, there wasn't. We didn't pay ourselves.
You weren't paying yourself.
So there wasn't any money. Like, there was potential carrying on.
Okay.
But then that was the time when Mark Bentley, one of our producers now, came and saw it, because one of our guys, Rob, had worked with him before, and he came and saw it, and then he brought Kenny Wax. And they saw it, and they were like, right, we're gonna do a tour with you. And it was like somebody going up to you and going, hey, this really fun thing that you've done with your friends, do you want like £1 million? There it is, go and play. Mm-hmm. It was
fairy godmother stuff.
It was like a Christmas movie, you know, yeah. Insane.
But in July.
And so from the tour, then we got news of the West End extension, and we got to go to the Duchess. And I just remember like thinking, when we were at the Duchess, it had literally been like 2 years since we were doing it at a pub. It was insane, and I just think I remember going in for the first about 2 months of walking into the Duchess, like down the street, going past Johnny and Chocolate Factory, past Mamma Mia. I was like in tears nearly every day, just being like, "What the hell has happened? This is mental."
Because to work in the West End anyway is a dream come true for many an actor. Exactly. To work in something that you think is really good is like a real dream come true. To work with people you like is a really big dream come true. To add all those things together and you helped to make it.
It's crazy. And then you get all the other versions of it that are going on at the moment. That like we got a YouTube clip of the Italian version. That was the first one that we saw that was a different one, and it was like a load of people that looked kind of like us wearing the costumes that we had just sort of gone away and come back with rough ideas, and then Roberto, our costume designer, had like really honed them and made them amazing, and that those designs and those ideas and those characters that we'd like just sort of flung out into this
into the world
play.
Of Fringe, into the, yeah.
They were like doing it in Italian somewhere like where we had no idea who it was or where they were. I don't know, for me and Charlie and Dave, I don't know about the writers, they must have known more.
Yeah, they would have known more about
but
it.
For us, just to like to see a clip of that was like a parallel universe. It's absolutely insane. And now it's everywhere. We all went to the opening in Paris.
Oh, that was
and it was just like insane seeing a load of people.
The Hungarian version. Mm-hmm. And no, it's great.
My weekday fix, darling, it has to be Radio Gorgeous.
Which is wonderful, because I mean, especially a show like that, you're including the audience. The audience is a necessary part of the show in the way that an audience always is. And a writer writes something, a novel, it's mine as a reader.
Mm-hmm.
It requires me,
mm-hmm.
And I change it, and this is an even further extension of that. Mm-hmm. Is that somebody's taken it and said, "Wow, we want to make it ours. We want to do this with it."
Yeah,
it's a fantastic compliment, actually.
Really, tell me about the Peter Pan, because I obviously recognize your face from the posters in the tube.
Oh, Nancy. Glorious posters on the tube, all over the tube. That was good.
What did Mom say?
Yeah. Oh my God, she's so happy. Because actually, like, one of the massive ones went up at, I grew up in Crouch End, and I went to school, like, I went to Highgate Station every day, and obviously every day of my childhood doing drama at school and that kind of stuff, I was just looking at all these tube posters. I grew up in London, going like, oh man, how do you get there? Like, how do you do that? I don't understand how these people are like on these posters. I just don't, it just seemed like such a far off thing. And I remember my mum calling me from Highgate Tube, that she just got off the tube, and one of the massive posters was on As You Come Out of the Northern Line. And she was just like, you're on the massive tube, I can't believe it. I was like, wow, that's so amazing. It's just so amazing. It's so ridiculous. Such a nice thing. What the hell were we talking about
Pan.
Before this?
Pan, though. Pan.
Yes.
Well, Pan was great. Nancy was great in Pan.
As were you,
oh,
my
thank
dear.
You, darling. Peter Pan Goes Wrong is brilliant. I remember when we were doing the play that goes wrong the very first time, someone said, if we were to do another one, what would we do? And someone, Pan Goes Wrong, Peter Pan. Can you imagine how fun that would be? And if you go on YouTube.
Pan, chaos.
Right, and if you go on YouTube, there are these amazing clips.
You have to do it.
You have to Google YouTube
Peter Pan goes wrong, but not goes wrong. I don't know how you find it now. I can't remember.
Peter Pan, like theatre mishaps or...
Yeah, and there are these schools where you know that Peter Pan's meant to be flying, and suddenly Wendy springs out of her bed, completely unbeknownst to her.
She's asleep.
She's meant to be asleep, and she gets flung across the stage, and it's just so brilliant.
It's just amazing. We found that while we were rehearsing the first time when we were doing it at Pleasance, and we were just... wetting ourselves. It's amazing.
Yeah, so
there's some great Aladdin ones as well.
Yeah, there are some really good ones out there. So it was a real joy to do. Also, from a personal point of view, Peter Pan was one of the first books I read on my own. Mm. And I used to take it on holiday every time to read by the pool, being this little kid. And my dad had always read it to me, and it was just this big deal, and I loved it. And I used to go to Kensington Gardens all the time when I could, because I'm not from London. So to do the story of Peter Pan was amazing. To play Wendy, my character within the play plays Wendy. But then it was fun and silly, and it all went wrong, and we had jokes, and it was just lovely. It had a magical element to it.
Yeah, it was chaos as well. Like, that show is so big. There's a massive revolving stage, and like the set is genuinely really dangerous. Like, it took a lot of rehearsals and a lot of practice. But it really set us up to do comedy about a bank robbery, because it was kind of the step in between the play that goes wrong. In the way that we interact with the set and each other, it's kind of just upped and upped and upped. And I think this play now, the comedy about bank robbery, we've got loads of different sets and loads of different structures that we're all playing with loads. And actually, it's not a goes wrong thing. And it's not necessarily like a character in the play, like the set is in Peter Pan and Play That Goes Wrong. But it really is like integral to the story that we're telling, because we've got loads of kind of montage moments that say you have a desk lamp that then turns into a searchlight that then turns into a headlamp that then turns into like loads of different things. So all the set is kind of like another character in a way. Yeah. And I think that Peter Pan, like the main thing I think from a company point of view that show did was kind of get the ensemble thing with the set and everything going in a really strong way.
It also had sort of like a progression.
Yeah, yeah, really. And Peter Pan also had a more straight storyline running through, an emotional storyline that ran through it.
And also one that we know.
Right. Yeah. It is one you know, but there's also this one where the two actors within a play sort of cross paths more, and you get the backstage life ends up accidentally coming onto the front stage, onto the forestage. And that helped us, because Play That Goes Wrong is sort of as is. You see things fall apart, but here you got to see people's hearts break on stage. Mm. And then now the comedy about a bank robbery has what I hope is also a lovely storyline, a love storyline, but more than that, you know, real relationships for you to also cling on to. So again, it's another
straight
step up.
Scenes, there's lots of real acting. It's very scary. It's very scary.
Well, as you say, there's a progression, and it's challenging you guys more as well.
Yeah.
So what are the physical challenges? Because it sounds like, you know, there really is there's timing, there's, you know.
Wow, yeah. It's a lot. It's a lot.
Like, physical work.
All of our bodies are trained to do certain things when gags happen. And I don't think there's another group of people at the moment that are, like, so intrinsically, like, this has to be here and this has to be here. And the comedy rhythm with us as a group.
Yeah. Is you moved your foot on that bit. That ruined it. Yeah. Can you not move your foot?
We're just so in tune with each other and that kind of thing. Because we've
moving
been working
together.
Moving
your foot there is not funny.
Yeah, it makes it less funny. You need
but
to be
seriously,
stood.
That's not it's at all ridiculous. That is genuinely how we speak to each other. It's like you...
And there's also just, you know, it started when we were doing our improv show, is that we are extremely physically committed as a group of people. We tried to make that happen, you know, potentially because we started it when we were 18, 19, 20.
And our bodies were younger.
Younger and more supple. lighter in general. But and so we used to throw ourselves into things, and we've sort of tried to keep that. So you do just have to be a bit fitter, and it's exciting because you've got actors on stage who in rehearsal go full pelt. They throw their bodies in. So you really get to see where it could go. And maybe you'll actually bring it back, because for that moment you don't want it to be as crazy and as big. But you really get to stretch it to see where the comedy lies within it. No one's timid. And then it is exhausting. And obviously with a farce, there's a lot of... they're just literally running around. So so that physically tires you out. But it's this. I had a drama teacher at drama school. He's one of is amazing, and he used to say specificity. It's not the guy from York. And he's like, specificity, and it's that's really important.
Mm. Well, and where as you an move audience, things, we get how the you benefit, hold yourself. Yeah. You know, of all of that work.
Clear jokes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Radio Gorgeous, podcasts for women.
What is it about, you know, pratfalls that is just so funny? I mean, I'm thinking about One Man, Two Govs, and the crooked, bent waiter.
Tom Eden.
He was in Peter Pan.
We employed him. We love him.
But pitching down those stairs.
I know.
Literally, splutteringly... hilariously,
it's outrageous, isn't it? It's so funny.
It's unspeakably funny.
I think.
Why?
I don't know. I've thought about this before. I think it's because when it's on stage, you know there's a part of your body as an audience member that knows it isn't real.
Yeah.
So you don't have to be concerned for that person. You get to just let rip at the funniness. So when someone falls over in the street, it is funny, but also your human instinct is also to care for that person, whereas you don't have to, you're allowed not to.
Because that's the thing we really have to be careful of, because that's the really important thing about going full pelt in rehearsals, is that if it tips over into looking genuinely dangerous and like an actor is genuinely in trouble, even though you know it's really safe, if it looks too dangerous... which you can make happen, that's fine, but it's not funny anymore at all. Mm-hmm. Because then you are just seriously like, is that okay? Has that...
You need people
wrong?
Yeah, for real.
And then
people really immediately stop laughing. Like, it's really funny, you know exactly when that's happened in the show, because everybody just shuts up. Mm. And it's just not a good... You have to teeter on the edge of it all the time.
But that's the wonderful thing about live theatre, is that we know you're really doing it, but we know you figured it out, you're doing it safely.
Mm.
You know, and my job is to point and laugh at you.
Yeah, you feel secure. The idea is that we're meant to make you feel secure so that you can laugh at us.
Yeah.
Don't worry, we've got it all in hand. We're going to make it look crazy and like we don't, but deep down, don't worry.
It's
and you
like
wink
thing.
At them and you're like, I've got it, mate. And then they just feel relaxed, they feel comfortable, they can, I think with comedy anyway, they can lie back. Actually, no, with all theatre.
Yeah, it's the same thing as seeing Fletch, I was going to say. Like whenever you had to... Charlie had to do like a window lift in the play that goes wrong, where she has all her pants on show and everything like that. But if you actually were in danger of seeing any real ass, like it wouldn't be funny. It wouldn't be funny at all, because then you'd be like, oh my god, oh my god, is that?
You don't want an audience
you don't want that.
You want them to go, oh my gosh, this is funny, and I can see her knickers, how hilarious. But even if I know that they're not going to see my vagina, if there is a moment where an audience member goes, oh god, I think I might be able to see Charlie Russell, the actress's flesh, they've come out of the moment, so they're not laughing anymore.
Yeah.
But even with straight acting, you know, you want the audience to feel comfortable that you know your lines and that you're really good and that you are really good at this part, because then they relax and they can get emotionally involved. So you're watching Hamlet. You want a Hamlet that you're like, wow, this guy's got it.
But that's why Tom Eden is so good.
He's so
good. Because Tom Eden is not that guy, but he created this man that's just, he's so safe with. He just knows him inside out. I mean, he got bloody nominated for a Tony for it. Like, it's absolutely
he's young.
Incredible.
He's really young. Yeah. He's not an old man. Yeah. And he made everybody feel like he had it down.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, could go to quite an extreme of making it look like he was about to get his neck broken.
So amazing.
Fantastic. And also, it is a bit funny watching people fall over. And just people's reactions to that. My favourite is when someone trips over the street. What do they do? It's a clown thing. There's usually one of three things. They laugh at themselves, which is... one kind of clown. The person who looks back and blames a piece of the pavement. Ah, oh, you came out on purpose and tripped me over. And then the person that acts like it didn't happen and just like saunters off. And those things are also part of the comedy of falling over.
I actually did that this morning.
Did you pretend it didn't happen?
God,
I never do that.
But then I felt really embarrassed that I'd done the pretend it didn't happen. I was like, God, I felt like wanting to go back and like laugh at myself or blame the pavement.
Redo.
But like just do a redo. But I couldn't do a redo. I'd already walked off. It was awful.
I burst out laughing every time I fall over and go pah like that, and
you
then
see, I
people think I'm
that.
Even more mental.
You don't want to overdo it.
No, but it's genuine. I find it hilarious. I do fall over a lot as well.
Don't want a flag post that you're laughing at yourself, because then it seems like you're taking yourself so seriously that you've made a lot. Do you see what I mean?
No, I see what you mean. I see what you mean. The weird smile.
Maybe we are like it in real life.
I do that to like, I laugh before you could laugh at me.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm in on the joke.
Which is like,
I own the funny here.
You know, you're kind of more vulnerable in a way. Sometimes.
But to be fair, that isn't, I do just find it funny when I fall over. Like, that's not what I'm doing. I do just imagine what it looked like to somebody else and find that really amusing.
So bad.
And like, I'm like, oh no, I need to sit down for a moment.
I was so embarrassed I did that this morning. Not the trip, the reaction to the trip.
You were all goosed.
I was all goosed.
Yeah.
Excellent. Good luck with the run of the show.
Thank you.
I'd say break a leg, but you guys probably...
Don't
we'll
say
be
that.
Doing
We've
that.
Broken
so
that's happened before. So please, no. We should say, you know, it's the comedy about bank robbery. It's the Criterion Theatre, which is by Piccadilly Circus.
Thank you, Nancy and Charlotte.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
This has been a Radio Gorgeous production for RadioGorgeous.com. Get in contact with us, contact us on info@RadioGorgeous.com, and to sign up for our shows to come once a week into your inbox. Who can think of anything better, darling?
This has been a Radio Gorgeous production, produced and presented by Donna Freed, edited by Bree Forer.